Welcome to our HAP Renal Physiology podcast, which highlights manuscripts published in the journal. I'm Tom Clayman, editor of HAP Renal Physiology. Today, I'm joined by Mike Romero, a professor of physiology and of biomedical engineering at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine, and Julian Dow, a professor of molecular and integrative physiology at the University of Glasgow. We are discussing a manuscript that is published in the December 2012 issue of AJP Renal Physiology by Mike, Julian, and their colleagues Taka Hirata, Pablo Cabrero, Donald Burkholz, Daniel Bonison, Eric Rittman, and James Thompson. They describe the use of Drosophila as a model system to explore the role of an anion exchanger in calcium oxalate nephrolithiasis. Mike and Julian, welcome to our podcast and tell us about your study.
Thank you, Tom. Michael Romero here. This work started from our acid-based bicarbonate work that we have been doing for many years. And about 3 or 4 years ago, Julian and I met at a pH conference, and I presented some of our odd work on fish. I threw up a little slide about some oxalate transport, and he caught me after the talk and said, you know, we have that same transporter in Drosophila, would you be interested in looking at it? That was really the seed for starting this whole study out. With that Drosophila clone, we did our typical oocyte electrophysiology and found that the clone has chloride bicarbonate exchange as well as chloride oxalate exchange and chloride sulfate exchange, similar to what we had found with the mammalian SLC26A6. I immediately emailed Julian and then called him up and said, you know what this means? This means we could potentially make a fly model of kidney stones. And so the paper that we're talking about today is exactly that model. And one of the keys in this is that flies don't ordinarily have much oxalate in their diet. So if you supplement their food with oxalate, the oxalate is absorbed by the gut, gets into the hemolymph, and then is secreted by their renal structures called the Malpighian tubules. Because there's a fair bit of calcium in these tubules, it falls out of solution, crystals form. And we had a lot of fun with this paper because it also allowed us to use some engineering tools. We took the microdissected tubules, put them in an X-ray diffractometer, which is where Jim Thompson came in, and were able to show, in fact, that the crystals were calcium oxalate. They had all of the powder lines that you would see from pure crystals. And then we were able to do another fun set of experiments with Eric Rittman in micro-CT and show that even the Malpighian tubules in the intact fly seen by micro-CT showed evidence of these calcium oxalate densities. So then, of course, Julian's lab did the very elegant Drosophila genetics and showed that when the gene, which unfortunately has been called Preston, which in mammalian nomenclature would be SLC26A5. Anyway, when that gene is knocked down, the flies no longer accumulate these crystals in their Malpighian tubules. We not only have a whole organism model that we can either look at the isolated tubules, but we can also feed the whole organism and recapitulate what seems to be going on in mammalian models and even in patients where oxalate is either absorbed or is high in the blood, and then because supersaturation is reached in the urine, stones form. And so that's the essence of the study. Julian, I'll let you talk about the Drosophila genetics and the implications.
Well, I think one of the things that's particularly exciting for this study is that Drosophila has a very easy entry level for doing genetics. And so whereas in mouse it would take you years to make and validate a mouse line, in Drosophila we can make these things in 2 or 3 months if they're not already available for $25 through the post. We were able to use RNAi directed against Preston to knock it down. But the critical thing in Drosophila is that we can make that cell specific. So we could make a transgenic Drosophila that addressed the question, what's Preston doing in the kidney tubule, by making a normal Drosophila with normal levels of Preston everywhere in the fly, except in the renal tubule, where we knocked it down by about 70-80%. And when we did that, then we found that we were able to retard the formation of the crystals. And so we could say directly that it was Preston in the renal tubule, which was a limiting step in the rate of formation of oxalate crystals when you added oxalate to the diet or you incubated them in vitro with oxalate.
One question that I have is, what do you think the clinical implications are regarding nephrolithiasis?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it clearly supports the idea that Peter Aronson's lab has been working on for a while, that it's not just what's going on in the renal tubule, it's also what's going on in the gut. And we know, obviously, from Julian's experiments that are in this paper, that this particular protein is found both in the midgut and the hindgut, as well as the tubule, both in larval forms of the fly as well as in adult forms. And some experiments that aren't reported in this particular manuscript, we have an indication that there's really the same sort of metabolism going on in the fly, in that what's pressed in is probably not how oxalate is absorbed in the gut, but rather how oxalate is probably secreted by the gut, or possibly it's doing both. But certainly in the renal tubule, it's really in the secretory mode, and of course that's the readout that we're using. For, I think the real power of this tool is that now we have an assay system in a model organism that's very tiny. With some of the techniques that we've presented in this paper, we can start to think about setting up moderate to perhaps high throughput screening assays to look at either compounds or drugs or gene interventions that may interfere with the ability either to form crystals or perhaps metabolize even oxalate appropriately.
Julian, I wonder if you can comment on the implications of your study regarding genetic disorders.
The oxalate kidney stone is the one that you would most often see in the clinic. It's maybe 80% of all stones. But if you look at nephrolithiasis on OMIM at NIH, you'll see a whole list of genetic diseases which predispose you to get kidney stones. And most of these are in the category of inborn errors of metabolism. So you're blocked for some individual metabolic enzyme, the upstream metabolite is backed up, and the poor old kidney has to try and do the job of getting rid of it. And frequently, the sequelae are that you get stones, whatever that compound is. So kidney stones are actually a very diverse family, and Drosophila is a great place to go model these inborn errors of metabolism, because 70% of human genes have Drosophila orthologs, and it's probably an even higher figure for essential metabolic enzymes, because flies and humans both need to use them. And the advantage for this is that although they're individually pretty rare and sometimes almost unheard of in the West, they are very common where there is consanguineous marriage, particularly in hot climates where it's almost traditional to marry your first cousin. And so they have a very high incidence of these diseases, but a very low medical research budget. But they could never afford to make the mice, for example, to do experiments. So Drosophila is a very easy, inexpensive, rapid testbed to set up experiments of your choice. The Drosophila seem entirely unaffected by having kidney stones. They have happy, undisturbed lives. And so there is a whole series of advantages for doing real experimental biology. We kind of think that the Drosophila system may help de-orphan these diseases in terms of finding a suitable model where you can do a genetic workup and study the genes in an organismal context.
Mike and Julian, thank you for participating in our podcast, and we look forward to seeing future studies from your groups in the journal.